Wissen es macht. Nur wer gut informiert ist, der kann auch gut handeln. Die Branche in die Breite gedacht und auf den Punkt zusammengebracht. Das ist das Friseurbriefing. Wir beschäftigen uns mit den Themen, die Friseure bewegen und blicken da mal gemeinsam über den Tellerrand. Sowohl im Blog auf noahwild.de als auch hier im Podcast. Insofern, los geht's. Ich freue mich, heute einen ganz besonderen Gast mit dabei zu haben, nämlich die Veronica. Ich hatte euch das schon angekündigt vor 2 Wochen und wir haben uns damals schon als Teaser darüber unterhalten, dass wir auf jeden Fall uns über Trends austauschen möchten. Es geht nämlich darum, herauszufinden, wohin geht die Reise, was sind die Megatrends, was sind die großen Bewegungen, was sind die großen Wellen im Markt. Aber nicht nur global gesehen, ja, irgendwie ins Freie gesprochen, sondern vor allem auch zu schauen, was bedeuten die denn für uns eigentlich als Friseure? Was bedeuten die für uns in der Beauty-Branche? Und da hat sich Veronica viele Gedanken drüber gemacht, weil wir haben ja auch bei Yours Truly von Anfang an Wert darauf gelegt, nicht nur irgendwas zu machen, sondern vor allem was mit Relevanz zu tun. Und Relevanz gewinnt man nur, wenn man was macht, was für Leute auch relevant ist. Und insofern ist natürlich der Markt- und Trendforschung ein ganz großer Aspekt davon. Die Veronica ist US-Amerikanerin, deswegen machen wir das Interview auf Englisch. Aber keine Sorge, ich habe das in Segmente unterteilt und werde das immer für euch ein bisschen auch mit übersetzen. Insofern würde ich doch sagen, freue ich mich auf einen schönen Austausch mit Veronica. Kleiner Teaser, das ist meine Frau. Insofern sprechen wir jetzt auch mal wieder miteinander, das ist da auch schon mal gut. Und ich würde sagen, los geht's. Veronica, hello, welcome.
Hello, hi Noah, thank you for the invitation. I'm honored to be in your podcast.
Yeah, the honor is mine, and I would say we get right started.
Sounds great. The first thing we talk about today will be trends, and I'm excited that you brought up that topic. It's something that we've been following for a few years, and we're seeing some trends come and go, and some trends that fundamentally change the way we do business. And today I want to talk to you about mega trends, things that are here to stay, things that have developed, and things that will continue to evolve. And will fundamentally change the way we do business, particularly in hair care. So the first trend I want to talk to you about is the personalization. And the second trend I want to talk about today is clean beauty.
Es geht heute also um Trends und dabei vor allem um Trends, die nicht nur mal da sind und dann wieder wechseln, sondern um Megatrends, die gekommen sind, um zu bleiben, die alles verändern werden. Und wir unterhalten uns heute über Personalisierung und noch über einiges mehr. So Veronica, looking at personalization in Germany, I think lots of our listeners will actually know a company called My Müsli. And they will think, ah, yeah, I was able to personalize my Müsli. I put some chocolate flakes inside and some corn flakes, and that's personalization. So I did it with my muesli, now I can do it for my hair care. Is that why we do it? Or rather said, why would anybody care and why would we do it? What's the reason for the season?
Absolutely. Great question, Noah. Yes, we're all familiar with the my muesli value proposition. So where personalization comes from is truly that there is one issue that the modern customer has. And that's the issue of choice paralysis. Too many products, all focused on the single set of attributes. The customer is overwhelmed with choice. She keeps buying products over and over, and she's not satisfied because none of them meet her expectations of what she needs for her hair, as she knows her hair best. And what personalization is, it's truly an offering an alternative to conventional one-size-fit-all products. Personalized beauty is creating a shift in the market, and awareness for such product is rising. So there's certain levels of personalization. You can start from more basic personalization when a customer can buy a product that carries her name. You probably remember that's being done by Coca-Cola a few years back, by Nutella. Then we can go to a more complex personalization where the customer can pick her name, maybe she can pick her product color, maybe she can select a fragrance. And then we go to a very deep level of personalization, which we could classify as customization, is where the customer's formula, customer's product, is fully designed based on her needs. It's made to order, meaning the product does not exist. And it contains only ingredient complexes that are tailored to the customer's desires and needs. And where that comes from is that Our modern customer has quite complex, if you talk about hair, hair canvas. She colors her hair. She does chemical treatments. She uses heat tools. She uses styling products. She goes to the gym. So all of this compiles to attributes that cannot be met by a single conventional one-size-fits-all product. It's not possible. She might find a product that can help with her color longevity. She might find a product that can bring more moisture, but she has to buy individual products. So she always has to sacrifice one of her hair needs in order to find a solution that currently exists on a shelf somewhere. What personalization offers is to take all the attributes of that one particular customer and design a product that fits exactly to her hair and her hair only. So that is the mega trend of personalization. As I mentioned, there's different sides of it. It could be very simple. It could be quite complex. But at the end of the day, it's really targeted to provide a unique solution for a particular set of attributes that the customer is looking for.
Wir kennen Personalisierung natürlich vom Müsli. Und worum geht es dabei eigentlich? Na, es geht halt darum zu sagen, es gibt ganz viele Auswahl und es gibt dadurch von so viel, dass es mir alles viel zu kleinteilig wird. Und wir wollen also nicht mehr eines für alle machen, sondern eine Sache genau für mich. Und da gibt es verschiedene Levels, von der Cola angefangen mit dem Namen drauf, bis aber zu einem Produkt, das auf den Punkt nur für mich gemacht wird. Es gibt heute so viele Einflussfaktoren um mich herum in meiner Umwelt. Daraus entstehend muss ich immer Kompromisse eingehen, um zu einer Sache für mich zu kommen. Und dieser Megatrend Personalisierung geht also von einfach bis komplex und wir haben den Weg der Einzigartigkeit daraus gewählt.
And I think you raised a good point, because you also talked about, let's say, personalization for the sake of personalization. I mean, it's fun to have my name on something, but at the end, would it satisfy me for the rest of my life? Probably not, because it's the same stuff inside. It's just me outside. So that probably caters to my ego, and I'm pretty happy about it, but it's not a long-term effect. And I think here, what we're talking about is not just outside in, but inside out personalized, right? It's really catered to my needs. It's like a Maßanzug, you would say in German. Yeah? It's like nothing from the Stange, nothing that is pre-made, but rather something that is really curated based on my needs. So that's pretty cool. And I can relate to that, the aisle problem. Yeah, when I go into the supermarket, our Rewe market here next to the company, and I look at the micro segmentation, I think that's also a marketing problem, because everything gets more niche and niche and niche. And at the end, you're just overwhelmed. You're like, oh my God, that's so confusing. I don't even know where to begin. So I think that's probably a pretty cool point to take a step back and see, is it interesting to go down the rabbit hole of micro segmenting further and further, or do we rather want to look at what the customer really needs? And at the end, why go generic when you can be specific? And I think that's what sums up this trend pretty nicely.
Es geht also darum zu sagen, dass wir nicht personalisieren um der Personalisierung willen, sondern wir möchten einen Maßanzug kreieren und nicht in die nächste Mikronische reinspringen. Denn wir fragen uns, was braucht der Kunde denn eigentlich wirklich auf seiner persönlichen Ebene?
Now, I will switch to the second trend that we would like to talk about today, which is clean beauty. Where that's coming is, clean beauty as a category, as a definition, has certainly grown over the years. These were micro trends that which merged all together into this larger umbrella of clean beauty. So when we talk about clean beauty, we don't just talk about natural ingredients or organic. Here we talk about a composition of directions, meaning that encompasses sustainability, that encompasses clean, less is more, efficiency without excess, consumer safety, and so on. So when we talk about clean beauty, really it's first and foremost about ingredient safety. Safety is now a key driver in the beauty movement space, but clean beauty goes beyond that, beyond the free of list. It's not about marketing claims, free of parabens, free silicones, but it's rather clean beauty is the combination of consumer safety, efficacy without access, meaning less preservative systems, use less of ingredients, no fillers, low environmental impact, ethical ingredient sourcing, ingredient transparency, and clear corporate social responsibility. So we've seen these micro trends over the years evolve and grow and merging together to create this macro trend of clean beauty. And it's heavily driven by consumers. This is a really much an interest from consumers holding brands accountable of their sustainability efforts, of their ingredient sourcing efforts, of their safety ingredients, what is being put in the product, what do they put on their skin and their hair. So that really is the bigger goal of clean beauty. And this is something that we've seen, not only that it's not fading away, but rather growing, becoming more complex, more and more brands standing behind the movement of clean beauty, taking self-evaluation of the products and looking for ways to improve the way they do business and the way they source their products.
Wir beschäftigen uns mit dem zweiten Trend, mit Clean Beauty. Dabei kommen ganz viele verschiedene Sachen zusammen. Es geht also um viel mehr als nur um Inhaltsstoffe. Es geht um Nachhaltigkeit, es geht darum, dass weniger mehr ist und dass wir Effizienz erzielen, ohne einen Exzess dabei abzufeiern. Alles ist natürlich sicher und deswegen geht man weit darüber hinaus. Es geht nicht mehr um frei von, sondern es geht vor allem um Transparenz. Und das Ganze kommt vom Kunden, vom Endverbraucher aus, zu uns als Trend, als Neuigkeit, auf die er Wert legt. Es geht darum, was ist drin, wo kommt es her und was macht es für mich? Wir blicken also hinter die Kulissen.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look at clean beauty from my point of view, it's also always about transparency.
Yes.
Right? At the end of the day, people want to understand what is it. Because if you look at the old days, like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years back, you had free of something, something. That something was something nobody knew what it actually is. Nobody could pronounce it. And it was free of question mark. And that's also negative advertisement and negative campaigning. And I think it leads to nothing. At the end of the day, lots of these free of things are also a personal choice. Like when we go to the ice cream shop, I like chocolate ice cream. You like vanilla ice cream, that's our personal choice. It's not a good or bad, it's just a personal preference. And the question is, how can you best sum up these preferences? And I think clean beauty is a good driver into that. And I think also, as you said, less is more. I think that's also a key point, like everything that we do should have a purpose. Yeah? Meaning not just pixie dust ingredients that sound nice but at no value. And I think that's just at the end of the day, it's about transparency, it's about accuracy of information, and it's about a holistic view, I would say. Yeah, it's more than just the ingredients. In the past, you were free of something that nobody understood what it is anyway, or what it does, or why it's better to be free. Now we take a broader picture, right? We look at, as you said, the packaging, we look at the whole story around it. It's more than just the ingredients. And I think therefore, it's more like a way of doing business, I would say.
Was ist man also eigentlich genau frei von? Meistens irgendwas, was eh keiner versteht. Es geht also nicht um die Eiscreme-Diskussion, der eine mag Schoko, der andere Vanille, sondern es geht vor allem darum, auch mit zu sagen, geht es hier um Feenstaub-Inhaltsstoffe, die also toll klingen, aber nichts bringen, oder geht es um Sachen, die wirklich Nutzen stiften. Es geht also darum, wie macht man es?
A big focus in trends as well as in consumer demand for sustainable packaging, whether that is the use of post-recycled consumer materials, or whether that's use of bio ingredients or biomaterials and so on. So we've really seen, as you said, it's the holistic approach that incorporates ingredients, incorporates packaging, incorporates brand messaging, incorporates transparency. There is a more and more focus on brands in keeping them accountable about explaining what they put in the products and why a certain ingredient there, what do they do. And that's definitely something we continue seeing growing and growing in consumers' demand.
Die Verpackung ist also auch ein total wichtiges Thema. Es geht darum zu erklären. Das Erklären steht im Fokus. Die Frage, die man sich stellt, ist immer das Warum.
So you already touched now on the word consumer. Yeah, that's super key because at the end of the day, we're doing it for the consumer. We're doing it for somebody. So I think for a new concept like yours truly, or let's say more personalization in the broader range, it's important to understand who is this actually for? Yeah, why would somebody care about it? So maybe you can share some insights on all the research that we have done from a consumer point of view. Why do we do it and who do we do it for?
Wir machen es also für den Kunden. Und deshalb sollten wir uns auch fragen, warum sollte er sich für das, was wir hier tun, eigentlich interessieren?
I'll be happy to. Thank you. Good question. So when we talk about our target market or who is the customer behind the trend of personalization and clean beauty, we see, I'll break it into three categories. We will talk about age groups, we will talk about disposable income, and we talk about gender. We've seen in general that females typically have more complex hair and skin canvases than men, and they tend to do more services to the hair. For example, they color, they're concerned about UV exposure, heat exposure, styling, product layering, multiple hair goals, and so on. And it tends, from what our research shows, that females are the ones that are more willing to invest in new products, in higher price point products, and in products that would be personalized to them, because they do understand that they have very complex canvas that needs to find a product that can apply to the multiple attributes that they're looking for.
Wir unterhalten uns also über den Kunden, über unsere Zielgruppe. Und das brechen wir runter in drei Kategorien: in Alter, in verfügbares Einkommen und in das Geschlecht. Damen haben auf jeden Fall komplexere Haare. Sie genießen nämlich auch mehr Dienstleistungen. Und deshalb wollen sie auf jeden Fall auch mehr investieren in ihr Haar und damit auch in sich.
When we talk about age, in general, we've noticed that personalization tend to appeal to the millennial generation or Generation X. But we've seen that younger generation, what we call the Generation Z, or the younger workforce just entering into the workspace, are not very far behind. So one is driven by the idea of I'm unique, I'm young, I am my own individual, and I'm looking for products and brands that tailor specific to me and myself. And then we have the generation that has been around the block, tried many products, and said, I've tried many, many products, and none of them have met my expectations. I always have to sacrifice one of my desires in order to satisfy another.
Die nächste Kategorie ist das Alter. Wir schauen uns an die Millennials und die Generation X. Da gibt es aber auch die Generation Z noch mit. Das sind gerade diejenigen, die anfangen zu arbeiten. Und es gibt da zwei große Interessen. Die einen sagen, ich bin einzigartig, ich brauche auch was Einzigartiges. Und die anderen sagen, ich kenne schon so vieles, aber bisher hat nie etwas davon wirklich auch meiner Erwartungshaltung entsprochen.
It's an interesting evolution. And when it comes to personalization and clean beauty, they do come at a higher price point just because the technology by itself is not allowing the product to be made very affordably, is naturally going towards the direction of a consumer that can afford it. So we've noticed that consumers with higher disposable income show more interest in personalized products and services, even though we see that in the beauty space, the income is not always indicative of customers' willingness to buy. If the customer believes that the product will be matching their performance needs, they will make that investment. And most importantly, whether it's personalized or clean beauty, delivering results that are superior to genetic product is the key for personalized beauty brands.
Wenn man sich Preise anschaut, haben wir auf jeden Fall eine Entwicklung und eine Evolution durchgemacht. Es gibt einen höheren Preispunkt, aber der hat nicht direkt etwas damit zu tun, wie viel Geld man auch zur Verfügung hat. Speziell bei Beauty ist das nämlich gar nicht so der Fall. Entscheidend ist am Ende beim Preispunkt vor allem der Glauben und das Empfinden gegenüber der Leistung.
And maybe Veronica, because you also touched on the names of these age groups and I hear them all day long, but I always forget it. Can you just tell me who's Generation Z and Generation Y, just to get a feeling like what generation am I fitting in? I'm 36 years old. Which generation am I a part of? I have no idea.
Absolutely. I'll help you. So the millennium generation is the generation born after 82 up to about year 2000. So you and I both fall within that millennium generation, even though I'm a little bit on the gasp, I'm more like Generation X. At the end of it, so really 1980 to year 2000 is what we qualify as generation millennial, so millennials generation. And the older millennium, so age 30 and above, are truly the buyers with a disposable income, knowledge, and capacity to afford products that are on the higher price point range. When we talk about Generation Z, that's everybody born after year 2000, 2002. So these are really the young generation coming out of school, entering into the workforce today, or maybe still living at home, finishing up their education. But they are the ones that tend to be a bit more beauty savvy. They are the ones coming out and holding brands accountable for their messaging and their brand positioning, their questioning, brand's integrity, they're looking for transparency, and they tend to very often influence mom and dad, who are the generation millennial and generation X of purchasing products. So when we speak about our consumer, we always have to be mindful, females age 18 to 55 is what we qualify as our target market.
So viele Gruppen, für was stehen die eigentlich mit ihren Namen? Ich bin 36 Jahre alt, in welche Gruppe gehöre ich denn? Wir haben die Millennials von Jahrgang 82 bis 2000, da sind vor allem Leute 30 plus drin, die haben genug Geld verfügbar, um unsere Zielgruppe zu sein. Daneben gibt es die Generation Z, Jahrgang 2000 bis 2002. Sie lieben Beauty, sie hinterfragen Marken und sind auch die Influencer, also Impulsgeber und Beeinflusser ihrer Eltern. Und die Zielgruppe, das sind vor allem Damen im Alter von 18 bis 55 Jahren.
And I think you've not only done lots of research on our target market, on our consumer that's interested in the concept, but also on the concept in a more specific way, right? We've done lots of consumer research, we've done lots of panel testing, and you could always say, well, people don't know what they want, so you as a company know it better, just give it to them. Like, you know, if you would have asked the guy owning a camel, what do you want? He would have said a faster camel, but nobody would have said a car. So that's always a thing like, do you want to do consumer research? And okay, you can always say that, but on the other hand, you have to say, there's nowadays that idea to say in German, Schwarmintelligenz, like the wisdom of the crowd. Yeah, certainly other people in a more, let's say, broader topic are smarter than just you thinking about it all day long and afterwards doing something that nobody cares about. So I think probably it's important to do market research, but probably market research when you know what you actually want to find out and not just sitting there and saying, could somebody tell me what to do? So I think probably what we did was a more, let's say, modern approach to incorporating market research. So for me, it would be interesting to learn more, why have we done it and what have we actually done?
Forschung kann natürlich viel betrieben werden und die Frage ist immer, macht das auch Sinn? Also fragt man hier den Kamelführer, was er will und er sagt ein schnelleres Kamel oder kommt man wirklich voran mit dem, was man da tut? Da geht es um Schwarmintelligenz, denn viele Leute zusammen wissen mehr als nur einer oder wenige ganz alleine. Es geht also dabei um moderne Marktforschung, die in die Zeit passt.
Very good question, Noah. And we've done a significant amount of research and I'll explain why and what we've done. First of all, is when we looked at the concept of personalization, it was the beginning of year 2019. So personalization was just coming into the market space as something that people had shown interest. Brands were making, some very, very early brands were making their first steps into the space of personalization, offering, as I mentioned, different levels of personalization, some just naming personalization, others were fragrance personalizing, thirds were trying to make some products. We didn't know whether that trend was here to stay or if that's something that was just coming in and fading away a year later. So while we were on one hand researching physically how we can produce a product that's personalized, finding the right research company that can help us on the R&D side of things, we needed to really understand, is that a trend that is here to stay long term? Is there truly a need for a personalized product on the market that's already so saturated with beauty products? So what we did is we made a series of research. First, we started with a very basic salon consumer interviews. We've sat in one of the Pomecho salons here in Zeham, Jugendheim, and literally interviewed customers. So as customers were coming in for their appointments, we were asking them to spend 30 minutes of time. And we were asking them questions. questions such as how do they buy the product today? What's important in a shampoo? How do they get recommendations for shampoos? What is a decision that's driving them to buy shampoo? What are their frustrations by shampoo? And so on and so forth. So what we were trying to understand, what are some of the key pain points? Where do customers get frustrated when they're looking for shampoo? And what was very interesting in these very, very early stages of research is that few things came really predominant. One was them that the customer is frustrated with continuing to buy products that are generic, one size fit all, and she always needs to sacrifice something. So she couldn't find the right product for her hair because her hair was so complex and she couldn't find something that fits all of her needs. The second thing that was interesting was that the customers shared that they would like to be more sustainable in their purchases. They would like to buy cleaner product. They would like to buy product that's sustainable, but they couldn't find product that is clean and sustainable that works. So they were finding challenges, finding product that delivers on particular attributes and at the same time meet their expectations of sustainability and clean beauty. And the third thing was the need of convenience. They wanted the product to be bought at their convenience. They didn't want to have to make a journey to go somewhere. They wanted to order it online and get it at home and have it fast. So those were kind of the few things that from the very beginning indicated to us that even though the customer has been buying shampoo her whole life, that doesn't mean that that experience was flawless. There was opportunity for that experience to be perfected, to be modified, and to be upgraded.
Wir haben also Salon-Interviews in Seeheim-Jugendheim gemacht, beim Konstantin, um genau zu sein. Wir haben dort Kunden entsprechend befragt, 30 Minuten lang, und haben viel erfahren über sie und ihr Einkaufserlebnis rund um Shampoo. Worauf kommt es ihnen dabei an? Frustrierend war für viele, dass man halt einfach Kompromisse eingehen muss. Ja, dass man nicht wirklich nachhaltig und rein einkaufen kann, vom Produkt her gesprochen, und vor allem das nicht machen kann, wenn man immer noch Leistung haben möchte vom Produkt. Daneben soll es auch einfach sein, mit online mit dabei, sodass man da immer flexibel bleibt. Man hat es also immer schon gekauft in Form von dem Produkt des Shampoos, aber es geht bestimmt besser vom Einkaufserlebnis her gedacht.
So it's really cool that you went to the salon in Seeheim. Yeah, it was Konstantin's salon, I guess. Yeah, he's always our partner in crime with all the stuff that we do here. And I bet you interviewed like, I don't know, let's say 10 consumers, 20 consumers, 30 consumers. Is that it? Or what was the total numbers of consumers that we actually engaged in this whole process of finding out and narrowing down what we want to do?
You will be surprised, but collectively through all the research that we've done, surveys and interviews, we've spoken to 1,735 females in Germany and Austria.
Wow. 1,700 something something. That's fantastic. Veronica, congratulations. And now you speak to me. That's pretty cool.
Du warst in Seeheim gewesen beim Konstantin und da hast du doch bestimmt 10, 20, 30 Leute interviewt. Oder wie viele waren das denn eigentlich? Naja, das waren in Summe über 1735 Damen aus Deutschland und Österreich. Da kann man nur sagen, Chapeau, das ist natürlich krass.
Then the second set of research that we did was once we figured out, aha, there is unconscious need for personalization. The customers don't know that it's called personalization, that they can make a product for them. They just knew that the current products didn't meet their expectations. So we put together a concept test when we tested a name, a headline, and a description. When we described your personalized hair care products, where you can buy a product that's specifically designed to your hair, da-da-da-da-da. We tested that here in Germany and Austria with a consumer panel group of females. And the results were fabulous. We were surprised to see how open, receptive, and thirsty our female customers in Germany and Austria was about a product that could be tailored specifically to what they have. And they understood. They said, okay, I customize my haircut every time I go to the hairdresser. I get a personalized hair color every time I go to the hairdresser because it matches my complexion. But so far, I have not been able to find a product to maintain the investment I make in my hair because my hair is complex. So this was very well received, which gave us that positive boost that we were on the right path. And we were basically tracking into uncharted territory. There was nothing out there that was readily available.
Mm-hmm. Wir haben uns also weiter mit dem Thema beschäftigt und vor allem auch gemerkt, dass es einen unbewussten Bedarf an Personalisierung gibt. Es wurde ein Konzepttest gemacht, es wurden der Name und die Beschreibung ausprobiert, wie das so ankommt. Das wurde gemacht mit Endverbrauchern in Deutschland und Österreich und es gab großartige Ergebnisse. Die Kunden warteten indirekt, ohne es zu wissen, auf den Gedanken der Manufaktur. Ihnen war klar, dass man Farbe und Schnitt personalisieren kann, aber nicht die Investition wirklich auf den Punkt auch schützen kann in ihr Haar. Und so erkannten wir, dass wir auf dem richtigen Weg sind.
So once we figured out, okay, our brand name, our key claim, our description are well received, we've modified based on the customer's feedback, we moved to the next, which was testing how our bottles should look like, what kind of key claims we should use to communicate. That's where U2 Individual Food Standard came through. This is where the green bottles and the earth colors came through. And the most recent research that we focused on was now understanding where is the comfort level of the customers in terms of spending. We did a price elasticity test to understand, based on knowing what the cost of producing a product like this is, where's the customer's confidence in them paying for a product like this? Do we match? Because the technology in personalization, it's expensive. Are customers willing to pay for something that's expensive? Or would they be willing to say, no, I'd rather use a generic product because I don't want to spend the money? So we did that test, and again, it came back significantly more positive than we expected. Customers were much more willing to spend more money if they believed the product was designed for them, for their hair needs, and they were not shy to come forward and put the money, even if that was an expensive endeavor.
Ja, wir hatten so den Markennamen, wir hatten die Kernaussagen, wir haben das Feedback eingearbeitet und wir haben uns dann beschäftigt mit den Bottles, wie sehen die Flaschen aus, welche Farben werden verwendet und auch mit dem Preispunkt. Wir wissen natürlich, dass bei Personalisierung höhere Kosten da sind und haben uns deswegen gefragt, macht es denn auch Sinn, sowas überhaupt anzubieten? Zahlt das jemand? Das Ganze ging viel positiver aus als überhaupt nur erhofft, denn es wurde klar, dass die Kunden dafür bezahlen, wenn sie sehen, dass ihr Bedarf wirklich gedeckt wird und sie davon einen Vorteil haben.
And the last test was this a product assortment test. Here we tested what products would be of interest to the customer. Shampoo and conditioner, of course, are staples, but what else in addition might be interesting to a customer to complete her shower experience. And that's how we gave birth to our body wash milk, our hair perfume, and hair and body oil.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look at the research that you guys have done, it really speaks to our goal, which was we didn't just want to launch the next product and put it on the shelf. For sure, it's great to do so. Yeah, it's good for our ego. We have a wild beauty product. We'd be very proud of it. But it would not make a difference at the end of the day. It would not leave a mark. It would not drive anything forward. Yeah, and I think we went the other way. We said, what's out there and how can we adapt it to our industry? How can we make it meaningful? How can we make a difference? And that's not the easy way. Yeah, that's the way more complicated way. It would have been easy to compromise along the way all day long and at the end of the day result in something which is just what we always do. And I think here this shows more of a perspective, but I know that you're also an industry insider. You worked for John Paul Mitchell Systems for many years. You've worked in many countries for them. I don't know, like 70 I have as a number in my mind. Maybe it's 100. I don't know how many countries there are in the world. Seems like you manage the United Nations for John Paul Mitchell Systems. So for me, maybe taking your perspective and looking at our listeners, which are our hairdressers also, why is this something that's interesting for them?
Als nächstes haben wir uns angesehen das Produktsortiment. Klar war natürlich, Shampoo und Conditioner sind gesetzt, aber was passt am besten dazu? So sind unsere Zusatzprodukte entstanden, wie zum Beispiel Bodywash Milk. Ziel war also nicht, das nächste Produkt ins Regal zu stellen, um unser Ego zu befriedigen, sondern vor allem zu sagen, wir möchten was machen, was uns substanziell auch weiterbringt. Was gibt es draußen an Megatrends? Wie setzen wir die am besten um? Und das ist natürlich nicht der einzigste Weg, aber der einzigste richtigste Weg und vor allem nicht der einfachste, aber auch dazu. Das Ganze kommt natürlich aus der Industrie jetzt als Frage, was bringt uns das? Und da fragen wir Veronica als Industrie-Insider, 100 Länder für Paul Mitchell hat sie betreut im Export. Warum ist das für Friseure eigentlich relevant?
Very good question. And my message would be, it's not something that's, oh, let's just jump on the trend. This is where the market space is heading. For me, it's a necessary step if we are to stay competitive in an ever so evolving market space. Personalization is here to stay, and it is evolving, it is growing, it's reaching all ages, all income groups. Consumers grow further aware of their uniqueness, they search solutions fitted to them and only them. And we need to stay ahead of the trend if we wanted to partake. The professional salon industry is already personalizing. We're personalizing hair color, we're personalizing haircut, and we're bringing the missing piece of the puzzle, which is the personalized hair care product. The consumers will continue to demand it, the trends will continue to evolve, and more brands are jumping into the boat of personalization. And I prefer that we are rather in the driver's spot and we create together this revolution than wait a few years back and try to jump on the wagon that's already moving.
Hier geht der Markt hin, das ist klar. Und um wettbewerbsfähig zu bleiben, müssen wir auch nicht nur mitlaufen, sondern vor allem voranlaufen. Personalisierung kommt überall hin, gesellschaftlich gesehen, und wir müssen einfach ganz vorne dran sein. Das ist das fehlende Puzzlestück für den wirklich personalisierenden Salon, der nicht nur Farbe und Schnitt personalisiert. Und besser sind wir im Fahrersitz der Veränderung.
And I think it's a fair point that you're raising. At the end of the day, hair care as a, I would say, industry always says, ah, we want to go and become like skincare, yeah, because skincare was able to really jumpstart price point, premium, luxurious. Yeah, but skincare, from a consumer point of view, it goes in my skin. So everybody understood why it makes sense to spend more, because it goes into my skin. And hair care, lots of people thought, well, I rinse it off, so why should I spend more? It's all the same. It's all the same here and there. With our brands, we always had the benefit with Pomichol and with Kemon that it wasn't the same because you could only buy it at the hairdresser. But go figure. Even though this is the case, not everybody is willing to buy it because they see no uniqueness. They see no point of difference. The point of difference with this concept is so specific, it couldn't get any more different than anything else. And I think therefore it opens up a huge opportunity for salon owners to also elevate their image, celebrate the difference that they can now co-create. And I think so too. I think it's a big potential, and rather be an early adapter, rather be an early mover, rather be somebody that pushes forward than somebody that runs behind. And I'm super happy that we can push this forward here together.
Haarpflege wollte schon immer auf ein Level kommen wie Gesichtspflege, und wir gehen hier auf die nächste Stufe drauf, der Evolutionsleiter. Unsere Produkte bei der Haarpflege ziehen zwar nicht so ein wie bei der Gesichtspflege, aber sie sind jetzt einfach überhaupt nicht mehr vergleichbar. Das waren wir zwar schon immer weniger bei Wild Beauty mit Pomichol und Kemon, aber jetzt sind wir es noch weniger. Spezifischer als mit unseren Produkten geht es nämlich gar nicht mehr. Das Ganze wertet das Image des Friseurs auf, und besser fangen wir früher damit an.
And I hope that this was also interesting for you guys. Wir haben uns viel unterhalten über Trends, über den Markt, über die Marktforschung. Ich habe ein bisschen für euch auch übersetzt zwischenzeitlich, und ich kann euch einfach nur empfehlen, beschäftigt euch mit diesem Thema. Wir haben das oft bei uns in der Friseurbranche, dass wir über Megatrends reden, ja? Und dann werden die Megatrends so gelebt, dass es eine Kollektion gibt dazu, die versucht, diesen Trend jetzt in Haare, in Klamotten, in Make-up umzusetzen. Aber das Coole ist hier, wir setzen einen Megatrend in dem um, was wir machen. Im Produkt, in der Art, wie wir das Produkt kreieren. Das ist ein vollkommen neuer Ansatz, einen Trend wirklich runterzubrechen, zu leben und damit auch wirklich wertvoll zu machen. Und das ist eine Reise, die beginnen wir. In der Episode habe ich heute mit Veronica drüber gesprochen. Wir haben uns also den Marketing-Blickwinkel angeschaut. Und in der nächsten Episode werde ich mit dem Konstantin mich drüber unterhalten. Der Konstantin hat nämlich mitgeholfen, diese ganze Serie hier zu entwickeln. Konstantin und Michaela waren mit einem Team von 2-3 anderen Experten sehr intensiv am Testen. Die haben dafür gesorgt, dass die Performance stimmt. Die haben die Leistung entwickelt, weil wir haben ja auch die Rezepturen für Yours Truly von der Pike auf entwickelt. Es gab keine Grundlage. Alles wurde neu gemacht. Und da hat der Konstantin mit der Michaela viel, viel geholfen, um das möglich zu machen. Und auch das ist für mich ein super spannendes Thema, nämlich mal mit ihm mich darüber zu unterhalten und zu fragen, wie wird man eigentlich Testsalon? Was macht man eigentlich als Testsalon? Was ist die Erfahrung der Kunden? Wie hat er das bisher umgesetzt? Und da freue ich mich drauf, mich mit ihm
auszutauschen. Mehr dazu also in 2 Wochen und ich hoffe, es hat euch gefallen. Vielen Dank, Veronica. Thank you for spending the time with us.
It was my pleasure.
Das war sie, die Ausgabe des Friseurbriefings. Ich hoffe, es hat euch Spaß gemacht, genauso wie mir selber doch auch dabei. Und ich wünsche euch, dass ihr gesund bleibt, dass ihr frohen Mutes bleibt, denn denkt immer daran, es gibt nichts Gutes, außer man tut es. Folgt mir gerne im Blog auf noahwild.de oder auch auf Facebook oder auf Instagram, da bin ich aktiv. Ihr könnt mir gerne schreiben, ich freue mich auf jeden Fall über eure Nachrichten. Wenn ihr mich finden wollt, Noah ist der Vorname, sowie die Arche. Und Wild der Nachname, wie unsere Firma DIY Beauty. Alles Gute und bis bald.